Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, QT and Sign Guy with you once again here on a Friday. Happy Canada Day to everyone listening north of the border. Some show notes if you're looking for some wrestling over the holiday weekend. Tonight, WCWO running as usual in Indianapolis, Indiana. The AIWF in Boonville, Mississippi. Rockstar Pro Wrestling in Dayton, Ohio. SWF in Tullahoma, Tennessee. EWF in Corvina, California. Tomorrow night, HPW in Columbus, Indiana, MPW in Edmonton, Alberta, IWX in Memphis, Indiana, NECW in Brockton, Massachusetts, PWA in Tottenham, Ontario, KSWA in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, UWA in Dunbar, Pennsylvania, APW in Boiling Springs, Tennessee, NWA in Amarillo, Texas, WVW in Shenandoah Junction, West Virginia, WCWC in Portland, Oregon, and RCW in Chatsworth, Georgia tomorrow. Without further ado, I'd like to make welcome our guest on the show today. He is Swerve Shane Strickland. Mr. Strickland, welcome to our program.
Hey, it's good to be here, man.
Our first question for you, since it is your first time with us today, how did you get your start in the professional wrestling industry?
Honestly, I was moving down to Richmond, Virginia after I got back from my military training, and I moved down there to stay with my mother and start school. So I Googled a couple wrestling schools in the Richmond, Virginia area, and I stumbled upon Ground Zero Wrestling. And so I looked it up. I moved down on, like, a Saturday. And that Tuesday, I went in to actually start my training and signed a contract for to start my tuition fees and all that.
Going into professional wrestling, did you have any type of athletic background to prepare you for training, like amateur wrestling or track and field, anything like that?
I did like a year's worth of track and field just like for my senior year, but mostly it was football and a little bit of basketball in the background.
In your career, you've wrestled a pretty wide variety of styles, everything from the hardcore wrestling to the lucha libre style to American pro wrestling and a lot in between there. Do you have a particular favorite style of wrestling that you like to do above the other ones?
I was able to dabble in the Dragon Gate style a little bit, and that comes from like me learning it from Ricochet and Rich Swann and AR Fox. I like that style the most because it's, like, the most entertaining, but also it's, like, the most impactful on the body. But definitely, I would say the Dragon Gate style.
Now, Dragon Gate, of course, here in the United States on iPay-per-view and such, they're very, very good product. There's also the Dragon Gate Japan. Did you have personal preference over the American style or the Japanese style when it comes to Dragon Gate?
Oh, I love the Japanese Dragon Gate. Like, that's honestly where everything originated from. Just seeing, like, the fast style of, like, Yoshino and Naruki Doi, but then, like, the hard strong style with Shingo Takagi and Shima and Yamato. Yamato's like someone I'm really a big fan of, and seeing his style, like there's just a whole mesh. And then you like got the imported talent with Pac, who's Adrian Neville, and Ricochet and Swan and Uha Nation, who's Apollo Crews. Just seeing those guys come in and like just mesh with that style and make it their own. It was just like around like 2010, 2011. It was just the prime time for Dragon Gate in Japan.
Absolutely, you're right. Now, you wrestle for Lucha Underground also, and of course they use a lot of the Lucha style in addition to some American style. Over at CZW, where you also are pretty well known, they have more of a hardcore style. Do you have a preference when it comes to the Lucha versus the hardcore style? Kind of the East Coast, West Coast type of thing?
Well, CZW isn't just hardcore. It's like every style. And because that's honestly where I learned a lot of Lucha before I went to Mexico. So I would say CZW, like, I didn't learn hardcore there. That's just something you're adapted to, and you see it so much. But I didn't necessarily learn it there. I would say, like, they've adapted me to, like, work with every style. And then when I went to Lucha Underground, I was already, like, keen on the Lucha Libre style. So it was just, I was already set in and programmed to be able to do it when I got there. But that was when I was learning it from some of the luchadors in CZW, and then going to Mexico and learning it from the actual luchadors like Flamita.
With someone of your background, once you got to Mexico and you started learning the Lucha Libre style, was it a hard adjustment for you to be able to learn that, or did you pick that up fairly easily?
By the time I got to Mexico, I already learned a lot of the basics of Lucha at CZW with working with Latin Dragon. So he taught me a lot of the bases and a lot of the arm drags and the suplexes and posting and basing for certain people. But when I went to Mexico, it was just like I amplified everything that I learned and learned new, more advanced techniques. And it was not as difficult as I thought it would be. But it was just a lot easier for me because I already learned like the general basis of everything.
For the listeners today that might be thinking of getting into professional wrestling, do you have any schools that you personally would recommend as a means of being trained?
I would always say the CZW school because there's always great names who are synonymous to like having big names in the independence. Whoever blew up in the past year, two, three, 4 years has been through CZW. And so I always feel like CZW is a good breeding ground for guys who are looking to advance. Not necessarily, like, I wouldn't say, guys who are just starting out, just learning wrestling from the beginning. It's not a good place for them. It's a great place for them. But it honestly benefits the people who've been wrestling for a while, for about 2 or 3 years, and need to tone their craft to become good wrestlers and stars on the independent level. It's great for to go to CZW for that. But also learning from ground up, CZW is a great place. And I would say the Wild Samoan Training Center is a great place to learn your actual basics, your basic bumping, your lockups. They're really strict there as well. So you learn good etiquette and putting together a range of little things that a lot of people miss out on the art of when you're starting out training.
Being that you are on Lucha Underground now, I know you've wrestled televised shows prior to that, but did you have to sort of learn a different way of wrestling in order to accommodate the TV presentation that Lucha Underground has?
Not so much. Not so much because being at CZW, I learned how to work with cameras, and it wasn't necessarily TV, but it was the same style of like being able to like get in front of certain cameras and find where they are, and time everything. Like I will say, like the something that was new to me at Lucha was like being more more keen on the time of your matches. So I would say that is what something I like definitely learned and got better at being at Lucha Underground. But Lucha definitely, as far as my overall TV presence, has brought my work into a whole nother level.
Do you find that the notoriety from Lucha Underground has made it easier for you to pick up other bookings without the mask also, or do you find that a lot of the promoters want Kill Shot from off of television?
There are times that they would like to book the Kill Shot character more, but it doesn't hurt me at all on how it's elevated my career. It did nothing but elevate me, and so now my overseas presence has like gone up exponentially since starting with Lucha Underground.
One of the more unique aspects there at Lucha Underground is the temple where they film all of the television. It looks to be one of the more unique wrestling venues that I've seen. A lot of people equate it to this generation's ECW arena. What are your opinions on the temple just as a venue and as the mystique among fans?
It's a great theme for us. It doesn't look like anybody else's. It doesn't copy anybody else what they're doing. It's a whole unique take on the culture of Lucha Libre, and it's a very urban theme for it as well. It's very unique, and it pretty much is our staple with the camera from the top looking down in the middle of the ring and seeing the emblem. It's ours, you know, like, it's also a miniature playground for the wrestlers and the matches. So pretty much our imagination runs wild with that place, with the temple itself. And not too many other places have that ability to use the temple as part of your matches. You know, like there's like big arenas or there's like studio tapings and all this other stuff for other promotions, but we have the advantage to use our surrounding towards our matches and towards our storylines that we're putting on.
I know you've wrestled in a lot of places in your career. To date, what would you say has been the oddest venue where you've had to wrestle?
I've wrestled outside of a Walmart before. That was pretty much the wildest one. That was around my first year of wrestling.
Were you having to use the actual store as a locker room?
We used a little gazebo-type tent for our locker room, but we ended up using the shopping cart area where the actual wrestling and where the ring was.
That is pretty unique. Since you have traveled pretty extensively and you've been all over the world, Europe, Mexico, North America, all over the United States, you've encountered a wide variety of referees, I'm sure. Who do you think are some of the better referees that you've encountered so far in your career?
I'd say definitely Chris Sharp was one of the best ones that, and I've worked with him early on as well, so he helped groom me to working with really good referees. Chris Levin was a good friend of mine. He's one of the top referees in the Indies. Sean Bennett, who's in WWE now. D. Edwards, who's in WWE now. He's one of the great guys. I also got to work with Earl Hebner once in Richmond, Virginia. So those are like I would say my top five guys. And I would say Kevin Keenan.
All of those extremely good referees.
Oh, yeah,
well, we have a game we like to play on the show called Word Association, a little bit of a psychological game. I'll throw out the names of some people that you most likely have come across in your career, and the first word or two that pops into your mind to describe them would be the answer. Are you prepared to play a word of word association?
Absolutely.
All right, let's hit it. First name, Eddie Smooth.
Potential, so much potential.
The gift, Jason Kincaid.
Unique.
Casey Carlisle.
Vintage.
Leo Rush.
Oh, man. The chosen one.
The product, David Starr.
Best friend.
Candice LeRae.
Oh, man. Consummate professional.
Sabu.
Legend.
Ivelisse.
Hard worker.
King Cuarto.
Oh, man. One word to describe him is, I would say, and hard hitting.
Pentagon Jr.
Charisma.
Sexy Star.
Confident.
Marty Elias.
Main event, Marty. Main event.
Vampiro.
Scholar.
Trevor Lee.
Man, prospect.
The final one, Will Ospreay.
Best in the world.
Well, at this time, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know that he has questions also, so I'm going to turn things over to QT for a bit.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Well, thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Shane.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. Happy 4th of July coming up to you.
Happy Independence Day to you, too.
Shane, I saw the YouTube video AML Wrestling number 35, which was entitled Jason Kincaid versus Shane Strickland. What jumped out at me from the very first was the Celtic Warrior appearance of Jason. Back in 1971, Robert Plant and Led Zeppelin tapped into the Norse god mythology and the god Thor, who was the god of frozen Viking conquest and assorted plunder, in their song, No. In the song, hordes of Celtic Vikings went to meet their maker in the halls of Valhalla after suffering grievous wounds on the battlefield. My question is, concerned about Jason's Viking ancestry, which compelled him to ask for no quarter and in turn give no quarter in the ring.
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay. So you were concerned about his Celtic Viking tenacity. Okay. I think he also uses the term tenacity, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so. I believe it was like technical wizardry was what he used in that matchup itself.
Oh, okay. Technical wizardry. Okay. Yes. All right. Well, I noticed a lack of entrance music for your entrance. Would you consider Led Zeppelin's No Quarter once you listen to it in full after this interview?
I'll take a look at it for sure.
Okay, that's No Quarter. Okay, very good. Now, in your opinion, should ring announcers have entrance music, and do you think that the ring announcers in Mexico are more passionate than American ring announcers?
I think ring announcers should have themes. Like if they had a specific, like the ring announcers themselves had a specific like music to get them to the ring to prepare the fans and let them know what's going on. But I don't think it should be anything more than just like a theme, not necessarily a specific one for a specific announcer.
Okay. All right. Well, Shane.
So your second part of your question with the, I always feel like the Mexican commentary always feels more like they're watching soccer. So they're really fast paced, calling every move, everything. And when something big happens in the match, there's a big reaction in the commentary. So I always prefer the tone of how Mexican commentators work over most American commentators.
Yeah, they do get passionate about their soccer down there, don't they?
Absolutely.
they'll repeat something like, goal! They'll say that several times, yes.
Exactly.
They, you know,
which they do the same. They do the similar thing in pro wrestling.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Right down in Mexico. Okay. Wow. Sometimes it depends on where you're wrestling in the United States, but, you know, they'll announce a victor and some of the crowds are getting hot dogs at the concession stand, and the decibel level will only reach about 60. Yes.
There are times when that happens.
Well, Shane, in your match with Jason Kincaid, the announcer said that you were in the neighborhood of 5'9" and 190 pounds. Can you take us through a typical breakfast of yours, keeping in mind that Henry Rollins, who used to sing for Black Flag, usually only has a cup of yogurt and a granola bar, and he also weighs 190 pounds. Henry Rollins.
My typical breakfast is like a couple of eggs, like a good protein shake, a good side with that, most likely a vegetable or a good fruit. So I'll try to get like hit almost all the food groups as much as I can. But if I did not have a fruit, most of the time it's going to be in the protein shake.
Protein shake.
Yeah. Well, like to really have a heavy breakfast as much as I can.
Oh, all right. Okay. Now, how about dinner? And do you cater your dinner calorie load to your workouts in the gym?
I'm not too much of a calorie counter, per se. But I like to have, like, a good dinner and then after that, another light dinner. So I like to finish with, like, two dinners, if possible.
Wow. Okay. Two dinners. All right. Well, Shane, I saw on your Facebook page an advertisement for Pro Wrestling Chaos. You were part of Project Lucha Underground. Your teammates schooled at the finest South. Were your teammates schooled at the finest South American lucha schools for Project Lucha Underground?
Yeah, with Liguero and Martin Kirby.
Yes, Kirby and I'm sure I'm pronouncing this wrong. Liguero?
Liguero.
Liguero, yes.
Yeah.
Well,
yes,
in this pro. Oh, go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about their background and training, but I've worked with both of them before, and we've always had excellent matches. So this will be the first time we're us working on a team aspect, so this will be very interesting, but I'm definitely looking forward to it.
All right, now, you know, on this Pro Wrestling Chaos poster that I saw, Project Lucha Underground was going up against a team known as the Swords of Essex. And the names on that were Essex, Robinson, and Osprey. I think you mentioned Osprey, the sign guy, earlier. My question is, had you had any singles competition against Team Essex or Robinson or Osprey?
I never wrestled Robinson or Essex, but me and Will Osprey have had a couple matches. We've had a couple multi-mans, and we had a singles bout in the 16-carat for WWE Germany this past year in March. And if you ever get a chance, go look that up and watch that match. It was probably one of my more profound matches in my career thus far. Me and him always have a really great in-ring chemistry. So just having all the elements of all these guys in the matchup is just really going to make for an excellent show.
Wow. Now, in your match with Jason, the announcer said you wrestled in Mexico in 2010. That's a long way from Tacoma, Washington, where the announcer said you hailed from. My question is, did you go to Mount Tahoma High School with a totem pole out front?
I never went to Tacoma High School. I literally just I was born in Tacoma, Washington, and was there for only 2 weeks of my life. And and then moved to Frankfurt, Germany shortly after that and stayed in Germany until I was 7 years old.
Oh, okay. Now, was your dad in the military?
Yes, he was.
Oh, wow. Okay. Was he in the Army?
Army, yep. He did about 18 years.
Wow, 18 years. Fantastic. Okay. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners a little bit about your military background, and was it in the Marines or Navy?
I was Army Reserves, actually, and I went into the military 2 weeks after I graduated. So 2 weeks after my graduation, I went straight to the military. Took a bus all the way down to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and trained there did my basic there for the 9 weeks that was required. After that, went to Fort Gordon, Georgia, and trained under the 25 uniformed position, which was signal support communications, which was radios. I recently got out of the military last January, and I did a total of 8 years.
Wow, fantastic. Well, thank you for your service. I myself did 20 years in the Coast Guard.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
They get
pretty
good cooks in the Coast Guard. How are they in the Army?
Oh, phenomenal. Phenomenal. Probably some of the best food I ever had in my life.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very good. All right. Now, did you find that you packed on a couple pounds in the Army? Would you say 20 to 25 pounds since you graduated from high school and then the Army?
I'd say about 10 to 15, more like.
Oh, okay, 10 to 15, okay.
Yes, from high school, yeah.
All right. Well, now, you said that you were born in Tacoma, but just spent a brief amount of time there. Do you do a lot of research on YouTube about wrestlers from the Northwest area? And if so, are you familiar with a wrestler from the Tacoma area who is not a terrorist? He's just a terror in the ring. And I'm talking about Defola Dabashi.
I am not familiar with this man.
Oh, okay.
I'm not familiar with most Northwest wrestlers, to be honest.
No, all right. Well, Defola Dabashi has been known to travel to the East Coast, and most notably, he had an infamous visit to Abdullah the Butcher's House of Ribs and Chinese Food, where he viciously attacked Abdullah the Butcher. My suggestion to you is, in addition to listening to Led Zeppelin's No Quarter, that you also look up Defola Dabashi in the Northwest. One of my main influences out here.
Repeat the question.
Yes, he's also been known to use forks in the ring. Very artistic.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Well, now, Shane, you bill yourself as the International King of Swerve. How did you come about this title, and do you swerve on custom-made bicycles or ATVs?
Honestly, it came like the term swerve from the rap song with Big Sean and Kanye West. And me and Rich Swan always said it to each other after shows. And so it honestly became just like something a real cool word I would use. And then I started like really comparing my style of wrestling with the word, because I like to move really smooth in the ring. And a lot of people just match swerve with that, but I was always a fan of swerve as confidence, and I always put swerve as confidence, so that's honestly where it came from.
Oh, all right. Well, I noticed that on several occasions you did a handstand in the ring with Jason, and that takes a lot of forearm and shoulder strength. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, you mentioned a man named Mike Bailey in an interview with a British broadcaster. Who is Mike Bailey, and is he a Lucha Underground staff member?
Mike Bailey is a really talented wrestler who used to come into CZW a lot. That's honestly where we first met, but we've had really good matches with one another. He's currently with border issues, so he can't come back into the U.S. for some time. And so he's honestly, it was a match I had with him in CZW that got me signed to Lucha Underground, because Conan loved my work so much with in that match. So I hold Mike Bailey like really dear to my heart as one of like the best talents out there.
Wow, all right. Well, I think I have a homework assignment and to look up any YouTube videos of Mike Bailey myself.
Our match is actually on YouTube, to be honest. So
oh.
If you're ever looking, just type my name in, you'll see me versus Mike Bailey.
Wow, all right. That's, I'll give that a top priority there. Okay, very good. All right. Well, Shane, in your match with Jason, he secured the victory when he hit his second Grave of the Fireflies. My question is, in Mexico, do they have an equivalent move of the Grave of the Fireflies? And if so, do you know its literal translation?
I do not, actually. I didn't know that he named the move that name. That's very interesting.
Oh, okay, Grave of the Fireflies, okay. Yes, that's what the announcer said, yes. Okay. Well, how surprised were you when Jason kicked out of the curb stomp? And was that move influenced by the movie American History X?
No, that's the double stomp. That move is more influenced by Shima from Dragon Gate Japan.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Shane, what events in track and field did you participate in your senior year in high school?
High jump and long jump.
Oh, wow, high jump and long jump. Okay. Did you know that the long jump world record is 29 feet 4 inches?
I did not. That is something I could not come anywhere close to. I'm about 10 feet shy of that.
Wow, you got close to the 20-foot barrier.
Yeah, about 19.5 is my longest recorded jump.
Oh, okay, 19.5. Okay, very good. I'm going to guess, now let me see now. The announcer said in your match with Jason, and I mentioned earlier that you were 5'9". I'm going to say if you went around 20 feet in a long jump, you have very good leg strength. I'm seeing your coordination in the ring. I'm going to guess you went 6'1.5" in the high jump in high school.
I was never really that good at it. I was only about 5'8". And my actual height is 6 foot even. Yeah, like I don't know why they've always listed me like 3 inches shy of it, but I've always been like 6 foot.
Oh, wow. Okay. So your top height in the high jump was 5'8" then, you said?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. Well, you might be interested to know that have you ever gone on YouTube and look up old videos of NBA Hall of Famer Wilt Chamberlain?
Yes, actually I have.
Oh, okay. Well, now he turned out for track and field at the University of Kansas. And back then, they did not have the Fallsberry flop style of high jump. He did what was called the Western roll. It's kind of interesting if you look up videos of Wilt Chamberlain high jumping. I think he got up to something like 6'7 or 6'8. However, he only took about 5 steps when clearing this height, so he wasn't even up to full speed when he cleared this. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
Yes. Okay. Yes. All right. Well, Shane, you mentioned the Japanese name Yamato and the words Dragon Gate, Japan, earlier in the interview when Sign Guy was questioning you. Did you know that there was a battleship in Japan in World War II named Yamato?
I don't know. Did not know that. That's probably where you got the name from, I'm going to assume. But I did not know where the name originated from.
Okay. Did you know that that Germany had 2 battleships in World War II? Well, more than that, but one was named the Graf Spee, and the other one was named the Bismarck.
I actually might have heard that at some point, but I'm not sure where.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, your dad may have mentioned this to you. Yes. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what rank you received in the Army Reserve? What rank?
I got up to E4, which is a specialist.
Oh, okay, E4. Now, in the Army, isn't an E4 a corporal, the rank of corporal?
No, it's specialist.
Oh,
it's
okay,
also
specialist.
It can be corporal, but I was received specialist rank.
Yeah, specialists or corporal, slightly confusing there. That's kind of like the Navy's rank of what, Rear Admiral and Commodore. It's like an 07. It's one rank above Captain. I believe they use Commodore as the term as a the commanding officer of a sailing battle group. When all the ships kind of like an aircraft carrier, destroyers, cruisers, submarine, and frigates are in a naval, how would you say, maneuver, or WESPAC, and the commander of that battle group is known as a commodore. Kind of confusing
right
there. Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Shane, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy. I wish you good luck on your homework assignments. One is to look up Led Zeppelin's No Quarter. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Nice talking to you.
Oh, and one other thing. How did you come up with the nickname Killshot?
It was the writer gave me the responsibility to come up with the character when I was initially signed to Lucha Underground. And so me and my friend Dragon from CZW just started coming up with a bunch of names for mass characters. And Killshot came up as one of them, pretty much to be synonymous with Deadshot or Deathstroke or Deadpool, one of those characters from Marvel and DC, and we came up with Killshot, and then we just pretty much spitballed ideas after that.
Oh, okay. I thought it might have been, you might have known about the famed Marine Corps sniper Carlos Hathcock, the deadly sniper in Vietnam, although he wasn't nicknamed Killshot or anything. Yes. And one more question that I forgot. Are you a big fan of the Sign of the Times video that are put on by Sign Guy?
I'm not familiar with those at all, actually.
Oh!
What are those consist of?
Well, Sign Guy comes on every week, and he puts on the Sign of the Times, and the Lucha Underground DVD is prominently featured in all of his Sign of the Times. You might look some up. Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And every once in a while, you might catch a glimpse of a famous lucha wrestler, El Ringo Tortuga. Yes.
I definitely look forward to that.
Oh, all right. If you give us our feedback on the latest sign of the times, that would be very much appreciated, too. Yes.
Good thing.
All right. Well, back to you, Sign Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Mr. Strickland, I know a lot of wrestlers have mixed feelings on wearing a mask just because of the constricted vision and the way that it'll deplete their energy from being very warm in the ring. When you started wrestling under the mask for Lucha Underground, did you have any difficulty making the adjustment, or was it an easy transition?
It was actually pretty easy because my mask isn't very restricting at all. So it was easy to just put the mask on and just get in the ring. I actually had really good easy breathing holes because the eye holes are pretty wide, so I got good peripherals. My nose and mouth are exposed at the same time, so I can breathe in my mouth and nose at the same time, so it doesn't really restrict me at all.
Sounds like you got the luck of the draw when it comes to masks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If they would have gave me something more restricting, I would have made requests to get that kind of altered in some manner.
Speaking of the mask, in your opinion, who out there, be it independently or even with some of the larger groups, has the best looking gear in your opinion?
Best looking gear? I would say Aerostar. Aerostar's gear is phenomenal.
Not a bad choice at all.
Yeah.
Do you have your own personal set gear maker, or do you get gear from different people depending on needs and availability and so forth?
For a long time, I was going to Dustin Reyes, who made like a big majority of my old gear. He made the Sprite gear, the Spider-Man gear, and he made the orange trunks that I wear now, and he made the long tights, the silver long tights I had a long time ago. So for the longest time, I'll go to Dustin Reyes, but recently I just went to Josh from Pro Wrestling Tights. Pro Wrestling Tights was the name of the place, and he is the same guy that does a lot of the NXT guys' gear. So his quality and is really, really top-notch. But timing sometimes is a little difficult because he has to take NXT people's orders priority most of the time. So timing, the turnaround time to get your back may take a little bit of time, but there's nobody else out there that makes the quality that he does. He also makes Will Ospreay's gear and Ricochet and Sami Callihan's gear. So like the list of guys on his role is pretty amazing.
Did you ever get one of the very unique looking masks that Dustin Reyes produced?
I never did. The only mask I've ever worn or received was from Lucha Underground.
They were definitely interesting. Jessica Havoc and Mickey Knuckles both had a similar one made by Dustin Reyes.
Oh, yeah. He's really good with the mouthpieces on the masks and stuff. He's really, that's like his thing when it comes to making certain masks.
Recently in professional wrestling, there's been a lot of debate and a lot of Twitter wars going on. One of the main focuses on a lot of these Twitter wars recently is the match that Will Ospreay had with Ricochet. A lot of wrestlers came out against that style of match. A lot of people absolutely loved it. A lot of people were actually in the middle of it. Did you happen to see that particular match that caused the controversy in the last few weeks?
I did. I pretty much watched it the next day that it happened. My feelings on it, I loved it. But it's definitely not the full style that I would do. But just because I wouldn't do it doesn't make it good. And just because a lot of people's styles are different from that style, doesn't mean it's good. So, pretty much they put it the best way. It's an art, and art is subjective, and art can be viewed by any person as different, as long as it's unique. And theirs was very unique and different from what anybody else was doing. And to furthermore put that out there, that was pretty much the match that they were expected to have, and they delivered on all accords. And that was the match they were paid to do from New Japan. So, therefore, they were doing their jobs that was asked of them from New Japan management. So you can't argue with that.
Absolutely not. Now, there's recently signed Will Ospreay versus Vader for later this summer. Do you think that Vader used that match sort of as a ploy to get a match with Ospreay, or do you think that was just organic based on Vader's actual feelings and a promoter took advantage of that?
I think that was definitely a promoter's call to do that. I think that was just an organic thing that happened. I think Vader spoke out on it to get the attention, but not to get the booking out of it. I think that's a bit ridiculous and far-fetched, especially for someone like him.
Now, speaking about Vader, he's, of course, one of the larger people in the history of the business, but he was also extremely agile in his day, did moonsaults and a lot of moves that you didn't see out of people of his size normally. Out of everyone that you've seen today on your career so far, who would you say is the most athletically gifted big man?
I would say Brian Cage. The stuff that man can do is pretty very, very impressive for a man anybody's stature. There's also a man by the name of Keith Lee in Texas. He's currently been coming out in Beyond Wrestling in the Rhode Island area, the New England area. Definitely check him out. He's a 300-pound African-American talent, and the man who is just unreal, can do tope con hilos over the top rope to the outside. It's really, really a sight to see.
You and QT were talking earlier about the ring announcers. I know you've done a wide variety of shows and a wide variety of promotions and, of course, all over the map, figuring in different areas. Do you have any particular favorite ring announcers that you like to be on shows with?
Larry Legend from Hands Down. I think Larry Legend's literally one of the best out there.
We've often said on this show that the ring announcer role is something even a lot of promoters don't necessarily respect. A lot of promoters will send just anybody out there to do the job rather than having someone that's good quality to be the very face of their company as far as what the fans see and what the fans learn about the show. Do you think that, by and large, the promotions you're with know and appreciate what the role of ring announcer actually is, or do you see a lot of promoters still just sending out whoever they can find to do the ring announcing?
I see a mix of both. I feel like I see a lot of guys who think they have a good-sounding voice to just go out and get on the mic, or promoters just do it themselves, and they lose the art of ring announcing to amp the crowd up. They're pretty much DJing for the whole entire show. And that's like having a radio show with a bad host. You know, you have to have someone who pretty much complements the theme of the show or sets the tone very well. You know, so that's a very important job. and it shouldn't be overlooked. But I see a lot of times where people just throw any person out there, a friend of theirs, a friend of the show, a friend of pro wrestling, or a friend of a wrestler, or just a pretty girl who doesn't have the voice required to do the job, but she's just sent out there because she looks good in a dress.
Very, very good point. Now, I understand you are going to be returning to Europe in the very near future. European style is vastly different than the American style and the Lucha Libre style and the Japanese style. Do you find yourself enjoying that particular style of wrestling whenever you go over there?
Oh, yeah. I don't necessarily do the European style, but I definitely can adapt to it every time I'm in the ring with guys who do that style. And it's always a pleasure because I learn every time I'm stepping in the ring with those guys. You know, I learn something new. But a lot of the British style is being appreciated by the U.S. because you've seen a lot of those guys in the PWGs now and just coming over for the big, huge, major events in the U.S. So it's definitely being adapted, especially with WWE as well. They're taking a look at these guys and plucking them left and right.
I believe Robbie Brookside might have a hand in that.
Oh, yeah.
He came over as a trainer. He's doing a very good job along with William Regal.
Absolutely. They understand what their product's missing. They understand the talent of independent wrestling. It's becoming a beautiful thing right now.
No, definitely a great time to be an independent. Now, right now on the wrestling landscape nationally, there's more shows from more companies than ever before, really. You have Lucha Underground, of course, on El Rey. Ring of Honor is broadcast both on Comet TV and the Sinclair Broadcasting Company, which is very, very large. WWE, of course, has the USA Network. TNA has Pop TV. All national platforms for aspiring pro wrestlings to get to. Do you think that this era of wrestling might be one of the better times for young wrestlers to get a break and to be able to make this a career rather than just a part-time job?
This era, yes, more so than anything, because now there's ways to make a means of living without having to sign a contract anywhere. But on the other end, there's more places to sign a contract than ever before that there have been since WCW. You know, now that you have like TNA, you have Ring of Honor, you have Lucha Underground, you have New Japan, all these places offer so much more to the younger guys and the smaller guys as well. And with WWE bringing back the Cruiserweight, it's becoming more and more of a better chance for these guys on the indies to get seen on the bigger level, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely. Well, we have a few minutes left in our show, so I want to give you ample time. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners today, plug and promote absolutely anything you would like, social medias, upcoming appearances, your merchandise, your favorite 24-hour diner on the road, anything you'd like, floor is all yours.
First off, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Strickland Shane. I repeat, at Strickland Shane. And you can go to Bottom Line Merch. Repeat that, bottomlinemerch.com, to check out Shane Strickland merchandise as well as other famous independent stars or former WWE stars merchandise on there. And upcoming schedule, as of Thursday, I'll be leaving to the UK and wrestling for several different promotions out there. I won't return till July 30th first, when you'll see me in North Carolina, AML. So, and you can go to my website, shaneswervestrickland.com.
Well, Mr. Strickland, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Look forward to the next time you come back. Best of luck on the European tour. Have safe travels, and we'll definitely see you when you get back.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you, Shane.
Fans, if you get the chance to see Swerve Shane Strickland or Killshot on a show near you, you should definitely take advantage of that. Extremely gifted professional wrestler. You will not be disappointed. And once again, happy Canada Day to all of our Canadian listeners. We will be back with you Sunday afternoon. Former WCW star Charlie Norris will be joining us. Should be an outstanding time, so we'll talk to you Sunday afternoon.
Yes.